Welcome to the Sunday Times Politics Weekly, where we chat about the week's big political stories. I'm Mike Siluma. As our big stories this week, we have the factors that have impacted the 2021 municipal elections so far. Also in this edition of the Sunday Times Politics Weekly, we'll try to gauge the temperature inside the ANC, where two of its most powerful leaders are fighting for their political lives and why they are so desperate to clear their names.
This aircon is racist.
I've never, ever been a spy.
Can the DBS bank loot?
The problem is that pinky.
I'll never subject myself to whiteness.
I'm listening.
Can you have consistency, Honorable Chair?
Corruption was an Olympic sport. They will always win gold.
This is not a ship.
Can you please come in?
Point of order.
Let's welcome our guest for today, Zimasa Matiwane, who is the Sunday Times political correspondent. Meredy Haas, long-time violence monitor, who's been on the podcast before, as well as Smongagon Keshova, who's the Sunday Times politics editor. Smongagon, let's start with you. From where you're sitting, what would you say have been the key election issues that have come up?
Thank you so much, Mike, for inviting me. It's always a pleasure to come in and discuss issues with you on the show. So this election, besides the fact that the campaigning, it's being run as if it's a national election, there were serious issues around the credibility of the elections when parties had to register their candidates, and there were issues of the election, this election process within the ANC, and we thought that everything was going to go smoothly and those issues were going to be resolved within, and now we've recently seen the issue of violence raise its ugly head, Bramaik. We have seen candidates that are contesting elections having been murdered, especially in KwaZulu-Natal. Last week, there was an ANC candidate who was murdered. And then recently, it's been an EFF candidate, and which is very unfortunate because that's the trend that we were wishing that would come to an end. It was the same trend in the 2016 elections and the elections before that. And that is what has really now dominated the headlines these times headlines are supposed to be dominated about what parties are offering and which parties that the voters need to choose from. And now we are dealing with issues of violence.
So talking about the issues that the parties are offering, what stands out for you? What can be called the election issues?
Mike, as I said in my opening statement, that it's a difficult one because very few parties talk about the issues that affect people at local government. Because local government is the face of service delivery, and people during this period expect parties to tell them how they're going to improve local government. But Bramaik, as you have seen parties promising people to pay them double the pension that they are receiving. We have parties promising to relocate people from their shacks wherever they're staying to Sentin. That has been the issue for me, is that political parties are sort of not speaking about the issues that affect the local government. We have the ANC. Their main election message, Bramaik, is that we are sorry. We are sorry that we have disappointed you. We are sorry that we have had corruption within our ranks. We have promised to do better. They don't speak the message about what they're going to do to make elections, to make local government work better for the people, then takes a back seat. And the main message now becomes this apology and this promise to do better. Then we have the DA on the other side, which promises everyone that if you are living in a municipality not governed by the DA, you are missing out. Where we govern, we do things better. Which for me is really not the message that the people are looking for. The people are looking for a party that is going to say, in your area, this is what is happening, and this is how we are going to fix it. Because you can't replicate what we are doing in Cape Town and say you are going to do it, for an example, in Manguze, in KwaZulu-Natal. You can't do that. And yeah, there has been the frustration for me in this election is that the real issues that affect people are taking a back seat.
Zamasa, as Mwangonga has just mentioned, KwaZulu-Natal. From where you are sitting in KZN, what stands out as the key election issues? Are they similar to what to elsewhere?
I share the same sentiments that Ushoba has just shared. So in my coverage of politicians visiting communities, what I've picked up is that a lot of people are not very clear on what the distinction is between national, provincial, and local government, and therefore politicians are exploiting that area, and they are taking advantage in a sense that they are not being held accountable about local issues. Instead, they are getting there and you know, promising jobs, and nobody mentions anything about municipal projects. Nobody speaks about council budgets or this is what we have done in this municipality. And if you give us a chance, you know, this is what we can do. And it's unfortunate that a lot of these political rallies are not community based in a sense that they are staged. When the NC president was here, you had, groups of people that I assumed were ANC supporters. They were all in ANC t-shirts, and it was all about comrade talk and people being happy to see the president, more than it was about what are the issues in this community, how can we get together to solve them. To me, it looked like political rallies more than election rallies.
So then the question that arises is whether, in your estimation, we can get to a position where local issues are prioritized by government at whether at national level or at local level.
I don't know. I mean when you cover the president, you also ask yourself is the president clear on how local government works? The president has never worked as a councillor. So sometimes you don't even know if the president is capable of answering questions should they arise. But luckily for him, they don't come up because he addresses the community and he leaves. He doesn't take questions. He doesn't interact with people. He doesn't hear their grievances. And it's political party people, not community people, and they are just there to clap and say viva, that's all.
Yeah. Mary, do you want to come in here? Because the last time you were on the show, you gave us a beautiful narration of the background and the origins of political violence in our country. Now, with regards to the recent murders in the election, have you heard or seen any progress in terms of prosecutions, arrests?
Yes. Can I just preface that with saying I agree with the previous two speakers, Nzimathi and Shoba, I think. You know that... And the problem is that people are just not empowered to really articulate their demands, and not just because they're disempowered, because violence itself is disempowering. In some of these communities, if you take, for example, Cater Crest, where the ANC candidate was killed a week ago, that place is, people are too scared to open their mouths because the place is controlled by housing mafias, criminal networks, the housing mafias allegedly linked to the current councillor. So they find it's best just to keep their heads down. But then, of course, the anger boils over, as we know, that with protest action, which we have not seen as much of as usual thus far. And protest is a sign of powerlessness. People don't listen to you unless you protest. And I mean, just before I move on to the whole issue of violence, what I'm trying to say is some communities, often the most disempowered of all who need the services, are too scared to make a noise because they are also violence-wrecked communities, especially in poorer areas, as with the housing mafias in the hostels, for example, where there are warlords. So it's very, I mean, that just adds to the disempowerment people have about asking for answers. Now, what the government is doing, as Zamazi said quite correctly, it's just kind of preaching the same national gospel about, you know, how they'll make amends and do things differently. But they're busy dishing. They're doing what they always do, of course, and they're dishing out patronage in advance. They're making promises, well, we'll do this, we'll do that. A friend of mine who was traveling to and from Msaduzi, Pietermaritzburg, yesterday, she said she passed truck after truck full of JoJo tanks, water tanks, that suddenly, so the impression was these trucks were taking them to dispense patronage to shack areas and say, look how good we are to you. You're going to vote for us, aren't you? So that was just an example of how the same old tactics are being used. Promises of houses, jobs, water, you know, the usual food parcels. But the context is one in which the climate of fear in many, not all, but many communities is not conducive to people speaking out and demanding to know more. They want to be quiet in case they are targeted as troublemakers because they are not known to be supporters of the local councillor, for example. We haven't really got to the stage.
But I was asking in terms beyond that, you know, to say, has there been progress in dealing with the murders?
Not really. Because, look, we've had fewer killings thus far, but you must understand that in 2016, it was a very contested election. I mean, there were a couple of dozen deaths in the few months leading up to the elections because there was the attempt to make sure that the largest metro, which is eThekwini, was a solid Zuma support base. And the same in Msunduzi. They wanted to ensure, so the killings, a lot of the killings within the ANC were linked to this contestation between the two factions. Now this year, the levels, if you want to judge it on deaths, have been less, but there could be more deaths any time because the crux of the problem is that we've made very little progress in getting to the heart of the people causing the violence. Now, you will hear about this wonderful ministerial team. Well, it's a problem, that team. It's run by the Minister of Police, and the person who reports to him is not even a detective. He's the former KwaZulu policeman who was an operational response man. They take dockets willy-nilly, and I can't go into it now, but I shall put something out. I've tracked their record. They've been at it for 3 years, and they say they've had a lot of convictions, but I can't get details of them. We know that key cases have not been solved, and they shouldn't be solved. One of them is the Sindiza Magafu case. We know who did it. The progress was made before the task team was established. I think that the task team is an obstacle to identifying the perpetrators of this violence because it reports to a politician, which is grossly irregular, and that politician is a colleague of a number of potential suspects in some of these killings. So that to me, I mean, this is the crux of the matter, that as long as we don't identify who is hiring the hitmen to do the killings, and then we have the problem of alleged involvement of rogue crime intelligence people in destabilizing. So these are the problems.
So essentially, Mary, You're saying that we're nowhere near getting to the bottom of the problem of political killings.
No, we aren't. We aren't. Because we need the perpetrators identified and brought to justice. And that has not happened.
Okay. Okay. As the matter, the other factor, so we've just been talking about the violence, but the other factor is COVID. Has it played any major role, or have people just ignored it as a factor in the campaigning?
You know, when you go outside right now, Bramike, and you cover a political, an election rally, you would swear that COVID doesn't exist anymore. So I don't believe that it has played any role, especially a negative role in terms of how political parties campaign or do not campaign. And I don't know, in terms of money that they have been able to raise different political parties, and, you know, towards campaigning, perhaps maybe they could have been an impact there, because we know, the amount of impact that COVID has had on perhaps funders and you know, stuff like that. But in terms of access to the people, no, it has had no impact. Brahma, can I say something on the violence?
Please say.
There's a story that I always go back to whenever this thing comes up, of a couple, both in the ANC, very active at branch level, and the wife was the councillor candidate. She was shot dead at home in front of the husband and the kids. And the husband was the next person on the list. And despite him knowing that this is why my wife died, he agreed to be the candidate. And, you know, risking death and making his children off it. So I think we are looking at law enforcement rightfully, as we should. However, political parties have also not played a role that they should have played in combating this issue. Firstly, I don't see any emphasis on education in terms of democratic practices. That, you know, we use peaceful political competition and, you know, not intolerance. I have not seen any attempts to depoliticize and professionalize the public service. So going back to the example that I made about the couple, it was the only way through which the family can have an income, and the man had to step up and be the councillor candidate after the wife was killed for being a councillor candidate.
And now for the other big story of the week, two ANC heavyweights fighting to clear their names of criminal scandal. Shaba, let's start with Oscar Mabiano. We spoke about him the last time. He seems to be upping the ante in his legal fights with different agencies. What is that about?
So, Bramike, Oscar Mabiano, it's an old story, Bramike, that the media has been running for a very long time. The reason why the issue is now back in the public domain is because the public protector conducted an investigation, and then she released the report, which confirmed what we all knew, that a businessman filed an affidavit. He made a sworn in sworn affidavit where he claims that monies that were meant to for the memorial service of Winnie Madikizela Mandela made their way to Oscar Mabiano's pocket. 450,000 rands was used to renovate one of his homes. So that's the story. That's the story that was out there, reported by the media about 2-3 years ago. But now there is a report by the public protector that is out there. And what we know now, Bramike, is that the Hawks have visited the Premier of the Eastern Cape, and sort of seeking a statement from him on the matter. So now we know there's an investigation. And as media reports came out last week, we know that the National Prosecuting Authority is refusing to prosecute him. But what he is doing right now, Pramaik, is that he is challenging the Public Protector's report. He is taking the report for a review, and he is also what we've also learned is that he made an application in court to stop the Hawks from investigating him, because he claims that this investigation is part of a bigger political plot, and he suspects that his political opponents, which includes the former premier of the Free State, Mr. Ismail Kashule, are somehow involved in the whole investigation. But Mike, the reason why this is a huge story is because Oscar Mabuya is the premier of the province and the chairperson of the ANC in the Eastern Cape, and he is a very important figure in the camp of the president Cyril Ramaphosa, and as we know that we are nearing we are heading towards the national conference of the ANC, where we are told that the president could actually seek a second term. Oscar Mabuya becomes very important in the president achieving that second term, because what he will do is that Oscar Mabuya is expected to lead a solid Eastern Cape delegation that will ensure that the president is re-elected.
Okay, but he's not the only person fighting law and the law enforcement agencies. Zweli Mkhize is mounting a serious fight back against the SIU. Why do you think that the two of them are so desperate to clear their names in particular?
They are so desperate because, Pramaik, these are the kind of allegations that could end their political careers. We know Zweli Mkhize, there is a report of the SIU that is related to a communications tender in his department that was awarded to a company with links to one of his close associates. So that's the report that led to him having to resign from the cabinet. And now Zweli Mkhize has launched a court application. He wants this report to be reviewed, and he wants the court to set it aside for him to clear his name. Zweli Mkhize, Pramaik, you must remember that when he left KwaZulu-Natal in 2012 to become the Treasurer General of the ANC, it was part of a bigger plan. It was a step ladder for him to ascend to the highest office, and the position of health minister gave him a public platform for him to be able to build that kind that political profile that could assist him in achieving that goal. And before this scandal came about, Pramaik, a lot of people were singing praises of Zweli Mkhize, and even alluding that he could make a good president in the future, and that is why it's so important for him to launch this this fight back, and also to try and have this report set aside through the courts, so that his name is cleared, so that his name could be sellable again. People can go to ANC branches and say he is someone who can possibly be the next deputy president, in order for him at the following national conference of the ANC to actually achieve the goal of actually becoming the president of the ANC.
Okay, it looks like that's all we have time for on the Sunday Times Politics Weekly for this week. And I'd like to thank our guests for this week's conversation, Zimasa Matiwane, who's the Sunday Times political correspondent, Mary Tihas, longtime violence monitor, who's been on the show before, and Simone Wongeshova, who's of course the Sunday Times politics editor. And by the way, you can find the podcast of this conversation on iona.fm, on Spotify, Google Podcast, Apple Podcast, or wherever you prefer to source your podcast. Until next time, we still say stay safe, sanitize, and avoid crowded places. Amai Siluma signing off.